fall out of compliance with this, we will enforce it. And conversely, we're not passing judgment on speech. You can panhandle, stand, you can panhandle, move, commercial, for the Greenpeace, for an individual, we're out of that business. All right? This moves us out of that business. I realize that there are some that disagree, and I respect that. I'm listening. I'm listening.
All right. That's all I have to say.
Thank you. Who would like to go next?
Sure. Good morning, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Jim Dugan.
And I'm Aaron Lordson.
And we represent Guide Dogs for the Blind. We're here today to congratulate you on your leadership in finding a fair and equitable solution to the sidewalk access issues that is laid out in the Sidewalk Management Plan Ordinance. Excuse me. I urge you to adopt that ordinance today. At Guide Dogs for the Blind, we train dogs and we train their visually impaired partners to navigate the public realm and to provide mobility to people with disabilities. Guide Dogs for the Blind is located in downtown Portland, and we train in Portland for a reason. We rely on the active and dynamic pedestrian environment that downtown Portland to prepare our dogs for service in metropolitan areas. As the largest guide dog school in the country, we have training centers in San Francisco Bay Area and as well as Portland. We train over 350 teams a year and have 2,200 active teams across the country. Many of our graduates are also proud to call Portland their home. We are equally proud of our new Portland Center located at 3rd and Yamhill, and we hope to be able to highlight Portland's role as a nationally recognized home base for this specialized kind of training. Over the past few months, the number of negative encounters between our guide dogs and people with aggressive dogs sitting on the streets in downtown Portland has rapidly increased. We urge our trainers to avoid these situations if possible. However, our visually impaired clients cannot look ahead and see or anticipate for potentially dangerous encounters. We feel that being able to walk the streets safely and unprovoked should be the right of all citizens. The cost of training a guide dog and their blind partner is approximately $60,000. An unprovoked dog attack can be the end of a dog's career and one of the greatest fears of our clients. The emotional scars to the blind traveler with the guide dog involved in an attack are unimaginable to those of us that do not depend on this relationship to safely navigate our daily lives. That is why Guide Dogs came here today in support of the Sidewalk Management Plan Ordinance. This ordinance provides clear access for disabled pedestrians to move through downtown without unnecessarily obstacles and interference. Ensuring a clear way through the sidewalk is paramount for those that are visually impaired and feel confident while independently walking the city streets. Let's make sure that our sidewalks are accessible to all citizens, and please support the Sidewalk Management Plan Ordinance. I do invite any questions for Aaron or I regarding our position.
Well, thank you for your testimony, Aaron. Thank you for your testimony as well. Really appreciate it. And who's your friend there?
This is Felita. She's 9 years old.
Hi, Felita.
Thank you for bringing her in.
Yes, very much. Hi, welcome. Thanks for waiting.
Hi, my name is Hallie Weaver. I work on call with Transition Projects, a local homeless shelter, but 90% of my income comes from street performance. Therefore, I'm here as a representative for a blossoming organization called PDX Busk. In regards to exception number 9 or G9 of the ordinance, which is performing music while complying with street musician partnership agreement. Now, the street musician partnership was developed and put into action in March of 1994, signed by various officials under Vera Katz, including police bureau officers, parks and rec officials, and Portland Business Alliance. Over the last year, I have been working with park and rec employee to find out who is upholding and maintaining the agreement. The only answer I've gotten was in September of 2009 when the PBA flat out told parks and rec that they have not been and will not issue the permits they agreed in the partnership for the foreseeable future. So if the partnership is not in compliance by official and public officers, only loosely by street musicians that may or may not know of its existence, and haphazardly by security and police as displayed by the April 25th incident regarding a local celloist, does it even exist more than an orphaned, forgotten agreement dovetailed into this ordinance? I believe if we create an ordinance, we need to revamp not only the Street Musicians Partnership, but sidewalk businesses, cafes, and permits, bike staples, newspaper bins, civilian cyclists, as well as police officers riding their cycles downtown on the sidewalks, thoroughly addressing all the points of city planning with regards to our federal constitutional right to free speech on public right-of-ways.
It does need to be updated, and we actually had a meeting this morning that included that topic, so you have my commitment to do that. It's something I'm very supportive of, and we do need to update and make it clear that how that happens now. And I think there are ways to facilitate it in a planful way, like we're trying to do with this ordinance, exercising common sense.
So, Mayor, if I just on 2 points. First of all, your day job at TPI, just so my colleagues know that, of course, TPI is going to be the operator of the Resource Access Center.
Yeah, the one on Broadway, yeah.
It's our trusted partner on that, so thank you for your good work. And since you mentioned in passing the Parks Bureau as part of the narrative. Since I'm the relatively new Parks Commissioner, if there's an issue that you have where you don't feel my bureau has been responsive, would you kindly leave your name at my office and your contact information and just give my senior staff person just a little summary of the issue so I can get back to you?
Of course. Over the last 2 years, I've been working with Mr. Coker with your office, and I'm sure he'll be happy to know.
Not my office.
Oh, okay.
But all I'm saying is it's a big city, so if you left your name and contact information, we'll get back to you.
Right back there is Amy Stevens, and just confer with her, and we'll follow up. And I appreciate your advocacy on this.
Great. Thank you.
Thank you all very much for your testimony.
The next three are Steph Ralph, Patrick Nolan, and Dan Newth. And they will be followed by Grant Moen. And Grant, someone I believe signed up right after you with the same address, and Judith Aftergut.
And just before you start, I wanted to mention one of the many things I've learned at the Sidewalks Advisory Committee is that it's legal for police to drive their cycles on the downtown sidewalks. It's not legal for anybody else or for skateboards on downtown sidewalks. So just as an informational piece, and I think we could discuss whether we should be having I'd like to have more information about why police officers can drive cycles on downtown sidewalks.
And you can go to mayorsam.com and get even a map and more detail on where you can be on sidewalks and where you can't with skateboards and bikes and what have you. Go ahead. Hi, welcome back.
Thank you. I'm going to try to go under two, and I'm going to talk like an auctioneer. I hope that's okay.
Good afternoon.
Mayor and City Council. My name is Steph Routh. I'm the director of the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition. On behalf of the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition, or WPC, I first want to thank members of the City Council for your commitment to creating a vibrant, walkable environment for everyone to enjoy. We understand sidewalk management is a challenging issue. In many ways, multiple demands on our sidewalks is a great problem to have. They connect people to businesses, transit, and needed social services. They are public spaces that connect all of us with our city. Equitable access and use is delicate and requires careful deliberation among all stakeholders. The WPC feels the most important consideration with regard to sidewalk management is preserving the use of sidewalks for its primary function, allowing people to travel to their destinations. There are many still outstanding issues that I believe would benefit from more time and discussion. To name a few, we need more discussion about, I'm going to talk like an auctioneer, how to address all aspects of sidewalk management.
I'll let you go full 3 minutes. You've been very kind to wait, and I don't want you to pass out.
Thank you. How to address all aspects of sidewalk management, such as sidewalk cafes, A-board signs, and newspaper boxes, in a holistic approach that values people over objects. A plan for education and outreach before enforcement happens, how training enforcement of this ordinance will relate with other aspects of sidewalk management enforcement, and I believe that there are multiple jurisdictions at play, so how those are going to be involved, A-board signs and containers in the right-of-way and PDS and sidewalk cafes within PBOT.
I'll even let you go longer, just so you know, your group before you as rightfully advocate for us to improve in that area, and we've gotten it down to two. And we're clear who's responsible for what.
Okay, great. It'll be great to learn about that. What role stakeholders, specifically the Sidewalk Management Committee, convened by City Council, can and shall play in future to improve equitable sidewalk use, and how best to monitor enforcement of this ordinance to ensure that enforcement is equitable and that people are able to move freely throughout areas with high traffic. This is just scratching the surface of issues still to be addressed with regard to sidewalk management. We are appreciative of City Council's work in developing guidance for sidewalk management where needs arise. I urge City Council to postpone this vote to discuss aspects of sidewalk management and help us meet those challenges together. And as a on a personal note, as a big fan of Hallie's and their blossoming group with PDX Busk, I'm really excited about creating Portland as a busking capital. Okay.
I think that's great. Let you know about newspapers. If you think we're going to get sued on this aspect, just wait till we come forward with newspaper ordinances. We understand that that's been 20 years in the making on the newspaper side, so we're working on it.
Right.
Thank you for your testimony. The advocacy of the Willamette Pedestrian Coalition all over the city is so important, so thank you as well.
I appreciate that, Mayor.
Hi. Welcome. My name's
Dan Newth. I've advocated on issues of homelessness for a while. I participated in the city and counties. Having been a homeless person, I participated in the city and counties 10-year plan to end homelessness, the Downtown Public Safety Action Committee, homelessness working group. This ordinance has a lot of history. I think obstruction is a nuisance. Or Title 14 started back in the 60s. It was a political push by Oregon. I think then the Portland Chamber of Commerce started as a political move to kind of get some of the ugliness out of the way. You know, there are certain parts of our society who view people who are of a different social economic status as unpleasant to look upon, and they don't want to see it. There are people in our community who look at a person who may be homelessness and feel like it is impacting their income, how much money they make. They don't want to see how the system and market failures of our economy are having an effect on some people. They're afraid that that homeless person seen on the sidewalk is going to be interpreted as a reason not to spend money in their store. Because the reality is we do have market failures. We have economic problems. We have systemic problems. And what this sidewalk ordinance does is look at a superficial solution. Look at a way to harass and intimidate people, mentally destabilize people in the hopes that they'll go somewhere else, that they'll just disappear, that they'll go into the shadows. It's an immoral law. It's not just. The oversight, the implementation of former sidewalks and ordinance laws is what's been unfair and unjust. They look at commercial aspects as sacred, and a street sign or an A-frame sign has every right to be in you know, blocking traffic, but a human being who is of lower socioeconomic status and not likely to buy goods from my store has no right to be on that sidewalk.
They do
that
now.
Is the root.
They do now.
That is the root of where this law comes from.
So I just need you to summarize.
Okay. The oversight of this and the implementation of this law is what's critical. Evidently, the law won't have any oversight. It'll have an advisory committee. And I do have tremendous respect for you, Commissioner Fritz. But I was sitting in this room listening to you discuss that there isn't going to be an oversight. There merely will be an advisory committee. Is disappointing.
With due respect, that's not what I said. I said that the advisory committee would be advising me and that the council is taking responsibility for oversight.
In part because we realize the sensitivity of and the importance of not only trying to get this right on day one, but continuing to try to get it right on the weeks and months to come. I just want to make it really clear to you that for the first time, we are making it And folks can disagree with how, no question about it, but for the first time we're saying explicitly that sitting and lying on the portion of every block is now legal. And your testimony is, you're right, folks do stereotype, do bring all kinds of biases to how people look. You're absolutely right. And that has, I think, led the discussion on previous policies. But I also just want to reassure you that with this new approach, every block face of every sidewalk in the city, that there will now be a place, and that newspaper boxes and ornamental lights and sidewalk cafes do not have any more. There is a place for everything and everybody. That's our goal. And keep attentive. Keep involved and help us to try to make it work. I appreciate your testimony very much and your advocacy and work in the previous efforts.
Thanks,
Mr. Nolan.
I didn't mean to be rude or anything.
No, you weren't.
Good.
You did great.
Hi, my name is Patrick Nolan. I represent Soapbox Under the Bridge, or I'm one of the representatives of Soapbox here today. First of all, I wanted to talk about a couple things that have been said today, specifically the question of whether I'd rather have a traffic ticket or a misdemeanor given to me. As a formerly homeless person and a very long-time resident of Portland, I'd much rather have the misdemeanor. I have the right to public representation at that point. I don't with a traffic ticket. Mm-hmm. And so being as it's going to go through the PBA's court and I'm going to have to do community service, I want somebody there with me that's going to represent me. As far as other cities in the local area go, I hear your call about going to talk to other cities. I don't live in other cities. I live in the city of Portland. And from the back of the room, I understand you did not mean this, but from the back of the room, it sounds like, go away, kid, and don't bother me. As far as sidewalk cafes go, if this is a law about representing all of our people in the city of Portland, if we're moving homeless people to the edge of the sidewalk, we need to be moving sidewalk cafes to the edge of the sidewalk as well. Otherwise, here again, we're talking about the same thing as we did 2 years ago and 4 years ago when Dan and I were here. The only thing that I really wanted to mention that nobody else has already not mentioned about the law, you've heard a lot of people talking about the law here today, was the assembly with others. It was in the last one, and Dave Wilborough wrote both of them. I was really shocked when I saw this one because I thought somebody had plagiarized Dave on the last one. Assembly with others implies that there's going to be two or more other people with you. And I'm sure that Nick Fish can tell us all about that. But when Dave Wilborough came to explain that to us when I was on the Safe Oversight Committee, it was, if you're going to have others with you, then you have the right to assemble. If you're sitting alone, you evidently, under this law, do not have the right to assemble peaceably. And you can ask Dave Wilborough about that because it was 2 years ago.
Sure.
As far as independent, meaningful oversight, I feel that it needs to be independent of the city council. There's been many times in the past where, and probably nobody's here that long ago, but...
Oh, I was.
Well, you've been here a long time. there's been a lot of times where it would have been much better if we'd had independent oversight rather than the city council overseeing the same thing that they're representing. And to answer Amanda Fritz's question about bikes on the sidewalks, I agree totally. And there's supposedly a class that you can take as a police officer to allow you to ride your bike on the sidewalk. PPI is allowed to ride their bikes on the sidewalk as well. And I've always kind of wondered because that's what they tell me.
Okay, we'll check into that. Thank you.
I want to be able to take that class because I want to ride my bike on the sidewalk.
Don't go anywhere. This is intended to be my bringing up the issue of funding is coming from a place of real passion that we share about more resources to this problem. And you might choose not to take up my request or my pitch. Fine. But we will not get close to achieving the kind of region that we all want in terms of equity for more people if we don't have more resources on the table. And this is a region. It is a bus ride and a light rail ride to Hillsborough and Gresham and soon to all other kinds of places. And if the conversation on advocacy for focus and attention and resources is left only to the city of Portland, we will get there.
I agree totally.
It is not, however, so let me finish. So I also said, keep at it with us. Keep focused with us. I encourage you. And you have done a fantastic job, and I know you will continue to. I said that as well, clearly, and I'll say it again. But goodness, for goodness sakes, we need your help to advocate for others, because on the money that we have to decide where to spend, that they have to decide where to spend, none of it's going to this effort in some cases. And we really need your help.
And the taxpayers of Portland cannot take care of everybody from Clackamas, Washington, and Clark County. You didn't mention about Clark County, too.
I agree totally. I live in the city of Portland, and I work in the city of Portland, though. And we elect you. We don't hire you. I'm sorry.
No, that's,
I almost said
keep
hire.
It coming.
We elect you guys to represent us with other with
keep
others.
It coming, but
right. We need your help, too.
We need your help.
Yeah.
Thanks. Thank you all.
Oh, and regarding the oversight, I just wanted to continue that conversation. First of all, it's very difficult. There's a balance between independent and having authority. The council has the authority to be able to make the changes if there, it turns out that there are problems with unequal enforcement. So that's why I'm saying that we're the oversight committee. I have asked the Human Rights Commission to consider being the independent body, and they are going to be considering that on their agenda next week.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Next three are Grant Moen. And I'm sorry, I can't read the name, the person who signed up after Grant at the same address.
How many more do we have, Carla?
And Judith after Gutt. And after them, there are six more people. The next three will be Dan Handelman, Leo Rhodes, and Ben Doner.
We have 15 more minutes. Hi, welcome to City Council. Glad you're here. Would you like to begin?
Sure, thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Mayor and Council Commissioners. Thank you for having us today. Grant Moen. I work in valet at the Hilton here in downtown. And along with my colleague here, David, we both work out front in the streets every day. So we are encountered with the activities and everything that goes on in the streets on a daily basis. And, you know, with the Hilton being the one of the largest, if not the largest, hotels in the state, we have a lot of business coming in and out of our doors. And that means a lot of foot traffic. So with the amount of space that's there on the sidewalks and the amount of traffic that we have coming in out of those doors, there's oftentimes problems with people getting by. And with my personal experience, and I know with some of the other guys who work out front, oftentimes it's more difficult to control the traffic, the foot traffic, with some of our guests that are, you know, coming out of, like, convention, coming out of meetings, than it is, you know, with just people who work downtown. A lot of times they don't realize that they're taking up this space and they're making it hard for people to pass. You know, they're having conversations. Their, you know, minds are kind of caught up in what they just got done talking about with their business meetings or what have you. And in my experience, I've had much more cooperation from people either panhandling or they're homeless and, you know, getting them to move along as opposed to some of the people that are there for business. And you know, as we are there to take care of our guests. We're there to assist our guests in every way possible. But with that said, you know, when these circumstances come, when they happen, when, say, an officer comes along and, you know, encounters that the sidewalk is full and it's hard to get past, you know, I just hope that whether there are warnings being written or tickets being written, that it's not going to affect business. You know, it's not going to affect the outlook of the guests that are staying in the hotel, of, you know, kind of how they look at the city. So that's kind of my general hope. And, you know, coming in here, we didn't know what to really expect, and we were invited by or asked by our management to talk a bit. So we were kind of hoping you guys might have little questions specifically to us that we could answer even a little better.
So if conventioneers refuse to move when asked, they'll get a warning first, and then they'll, if they don't, they'll get ticketed. Does that provide you with a useful tool to move conventioners along?
It does. You know, we have the same problems with car traffic. A lot of times, you know, we have that one travel lane of traffic. There's the bus lane and there's the max lane. Oftentimes we have to tell guests, you know, you can't park, you can't stop on the road. You know, you might get a ticket from TriMet. Not to try and threaten them, but just to let them know that this is what can happen. And oftentimes we'll get, oh, okay, you know, I'll move along. Or other times it's, sorry, I'm not moving. And, you know, that, I don't know if it'll help
a lot of times we'll get kind of a dirty look from people for just telling them the reality of how, you know, how it is. So I think, you know, we can certainly tell them, but and oftentimes our security staff is out there to assist when necessary.
I've had a conversation with your general manager about this because I park in that garage, and you know, the purpose of these rules is to create a level playing field for everybody. And so, for example, when a bus arrives from the airport and a crew from an airplane gets out and all the luggage is stacked in the middle of the sidewalk, blocking the sidewalk, that is not allowed. It's not allowed currently and would not be allowed under this ordinance. I checked with Sue Keel the other day because frequently there are parked cars in front of the building, double park with flashing lights, and sometimes you allow your guests to go into the building and leave their cars. That's about a $300 fine, because that is, you are not allowed to double park on a street. And when you do that, when that happens during rush hour, when people are exiting the garage, it creates a safety hazard. So I want to be clear that these rules are designed to apply to everybody. And to the extent the Hilton seeks some special relief, there may be things that can be done in terms of dedicated parking in front, which I believe you already have, places where cars can come in. There could be other accommodations that are within the discretion of the transportation commissioner. But what cannot continue is using the sidewalks as staging areas for people coming and going. And that is not a question of frankly, of accommodating customers of the Hilton. It is respecting the rights of people to have mobility and access on our sidewalks. And I think that's just something that is going to have to get worked out. And it is not our intent to be anti-business or pro-business on that. It is to apply these rules equally to all. And I encourage you, particularly on the double parking, which creates safety hazards for people coming out of the garage, and times where people get in, where sometimes you guys get in the cars and back up to get into the garage, which is also illegal, going against on a one-way street, going backwards, that's illegal, and stacking stuff on the sidewalk, which blocks the sidewalk for people who are pedestrians. You know, there's going to have to be some accommodation. City's very interested in working with you, but that is a public sidewalk. It is not.
Right.
It is not a Hilton on-off ramp.
Right. I should have been a little more clear. I do work at the main tower on 6th Avenue. I think you might be referring to the one, the executive tower on Taylor.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it is a little bit different of a setup, but I just want to be clear on that.
Thank you. Did you want to add anything?
Certainly. My name is David McCallum, and as somebody that lives and works downtown, I spend most of my time down here, and I get around by foot, and I am an able body, but I don't find any real obstructions from the homeless, and they, you know, they're very respectable, typically, and get out of the way for everybody. I find more congestion from business people and stuff like that, so I don't think it's necessary, and it's a bit unjust if you ask me, and I wouldn't have even spoken today unless I wasn't asked by my employer to come down. And listening to all the testimonies, it's really opened my eyes to see really what I feel are the reasons behind it. And while they're admirable on your part, and I understand you guys see it as an issue, I don't see it as a big one. And I think it should be abolished shouldn't be passed as an ordinance. That's about it.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony. I really appreciate it. Hi.
Hi.
How are you?
Good. I'm Judith Aftergut.
Thanks for waiting.
Oh, no problem. It's been really interesting. So I'm going to read an email that I sent, and then maybe I'll have a little bit more to say. It's not very long. I'm writing to ask you to reconsider the need for the sidewalk ordinance that has been recently drafted. I have a house in southwest Portland and travel frequently on TriMet through downtown. I've trained myself to interact with people on the street as part of my community, and I think maybe that's one of my points here, is that that whatever we design, that it fosters the sense of community. I mean, I just think that's so important. It's not an issue for me. It's often a pleasant interaction with people, homeless or not, asking for money or not, and sometimes it's a joy. I offer people Sisters of the Road meal coupons, which seems to me a healthy and respectful response. And I think at one time I sent you a note, Commissioner Fritz, and I think it may still be on your website. I'm not sure about this. But I think that fostering positive ways for people to interact who wouldn't ordinarily interact. You know, the meal coupons, that's one possible way, but maybe there are others that we haven't thought of. So the people, when they come through downtown, have a way to interact respectfully and not, you know, feel, I mean, I know we're not talking about panhandling, but that they don't feel guilt-tripped or something, that there's something we can do that's a clear and respectful interchange. I can't imagine what it must be like to be living on the streets. When I go downtown and need a bathroom, I can go to your hotel. I can go to a hotel. Really, I can go, you know, I can, if I need a place to sit out of the rain, I can go to a coffee shop or a restaurant or a hotel lobby. And if I didn't have a home, I'd want to be able to be out of the rain or under an awning or sleep wherever I could safely do that. I know this creates an issue with businesses, and yet I'm sure that there can be creative solutions. And one would obviously be more available housing for people with limited resources. Maybe there could be an education campaign sponsored by a few businesses to help people of all income levels build the capacity to relate to each other, share the space downtown, and interact in ways that work for everyone with no one left out. I appreciate all the city's doing to assist people on the streets who have limited resources. I know there are growing numbers of people without homes in this economy, and that the state and the city have resource issues in this economy, too. Personally, I would be willing to pay slightly higher property taxes if that money went to support low-income housing and other good solutions, and I would be happy to provide further thoughts if requested.
Well, we appreciate your email. We received it, we reviewed it, we will follow up on your offer to help. So thank you. Thank you all very much. Appreciate your testimony.
Yep.
How many more?
Six more.
Okay.
The next three are Dan Handelman, Leo Rhodes, and Ben Doner.
Welcome back. Thanks for waiting. Glad you're here. I bet you prepared for 3 minutes.
Good guess, Your Honor. Thank you very much.
Who's the third?
How about Ben Doner? Okay, how about Beatty Hempster?
Anybody else?
William Barnes? I think he just left. Okay. How about Marco Lamson?
Mr. Lassen. Yeah, we'll get him when he. I think he went to the restroom, didn't he? Mr. Handelman, welcome back.
Thank you. Will I have the 3 minutes?
Of course.
Thank you very much. I'm Dan Handelman from Portland Cop Watch. Thank you, City Council and Mayor Adams. I'm starting out by saying that I think you understand that everybody that's here today is not against anybody with disabilities. I don't think anybody's expressed that they don't want people with disabilities to come down the sidewalk. So that's not what the opposition to this ordinance is about. I was keeping a little tally here, and what I've got is 26 people who've testified either against the ordinance or raising questions about the ordinance, and one person who testified in favor of it about a part of the ordinance that actually will not necessarily solve the problem that he described, which is dogs that might attack a guide dog, because they can still be on the sidewalk. Other dogs can still be on the sidewalk. So where is the outcry for this ordinance? Where are the people who are supporting the work that you've done on this, you say, for a year? We know it's the Portland Business Alliance that's been pushing you for this, and they don't have a representative here today. So I think that regardless of their hundreds of thousands of dollars...
Actually, they do.
Okay, they're not speaking.
Not yet.
Just because they give hundreds of thousands of dollars, which is wonderful, and I encourage them to keep doing it, doesn't give them the right to buy off civil rights for other people. And we've said this about many ordinances in the past. Police have broad authority in this. There is no place in an ordinance to put down a city policy that you're going to have undercover officers downtown consistently looking for people littering. That makes that city policy until you decide to revoke it sometime in the future. If you want to run that as an experiment, you shouldn't put it into a city ordinance. It's not a good idea. But we just think that's not a great idea. You're sitting on the sidewalk. You don't expect the person next to you to be an undercover cop looking for you to do something wrong and slip up. In terms of the question about criminalization, and I know we've talked with Commissioner Fish about this a lot, let's think about the issue of immigration, where I saw the police have a light bulb over the head moment at the CPRC meeting a few months ago. They realized that when they arrested a person who's maybe not in the country documented, and they go off to jail, even though the Portland police aren't enforcing immigration, an ICE agent in the jail might take that person and deport them. So even though you're saying that this is meant to criminalize the homeless because it's not, it's a $250 fine, if it does get to the point where there's a bench warrant out for somebody, it ends up criminalizing them anyway, even if that's not your intention.
Dan, I would say that when you and I had that conversation, an extensive one on that point, you were actually very candid with me, and you said that technically it does not criminalize. You said that you thought it targeted, and you said that you're using the word criminalize in a very general sense, not intended to mean it actually criminalizes. And I sometimes think we have to be careful with how we use language, but I appreciated the nuanced way you were using it. But clearly something that has on its face a civil fine is not intended to criminalize any more than a parking ticket, which on its face is a civil fine, which presumably if you don't pay it over time could go up the ladder to a criminal citation if you're hauled into court. I don't think we don't say that people are intend to criminalize a parking violation, because at some point down the road, if you flaunt the system, a warrant can be issued for your arrest, that was intended. But I appreciated in our conversation that you clarified that you're using the term criminalizing in a broad sense and not in the sense that it is actually intended to criminalize.
Right, but what I'm trying to get at with my analogy is that it's the unintended consequence that people can be criminalized if they don't show up for their community service or pay the $250. Last time, we've been calling this Sit Live 4.0, despite the fact that you can sit and lie in some parts of the sidewalk. Last go-around, 85% of the people cited were homeless people. I would be amazed if it doesn't come out with that same kind of disproportionate enforcement again. I wonder who's going to be able to call the phone number, although a lot of people, homeless people do have telephones. It's probably going to be inordinately people who have money who are going to be calling the phone number to complain about people who don't have money. And in terms of blocking the sidewalk with animals, police horses, I'm hoping they're still on the chopping block, because there's nothing that takes up more of a sidewalk than a police horse. I don't know if that means my time is up. But
no, you can have some more time.
Okay. Disorderly conduct, so this again goes back to the question of whether you're enforcing laws that already exist or not. Somebody already said, I think that it was Mr. Wobrell, that if somebody won't move under the ordinance, they can be cited under disorderly conduct because they refuse to move. So why write this ordinance at all? Why bother making a new law that really doesn't do anything except for make it easy for police to push homeless people to the curb, as has been said, in a city where it rains 6 months a year, where they're going to be splashed by water, where they're going to be in danger of falling into traffic, and where they're competing with the parking meter machines and the boxes for newspapers and all the other things that are already on that side of the sidewalk?
We have a disagreement over what is compassionate, I believe. And it sounds like it's an honest disagreement. But I don't think having the only tool available to the city for enforcement is criminal violations. I just don't think that having only that tool in the box for sidewalk management is, I don't find that fair. Let me finish. I think that we just disagree, and that's all right. It might turn into, for lack of action, lack of follow-up, if someone first gets a warning and then is cited and doesn't follow up with community court, doesn't follow up, then we have heard from David Warwell what happens. But there are many steps for someone who is cited to deal with the infraction and the opportunity to do that with much less impact to their life than simply, you know, criminal citation. So I appreciate what you're saying. I think what we're proposing, is more compassionate. Combined with the fact that there's a place for everyone on every sidewalk, on every block face. Now, we might disagree, and the reason that we actually look to the ADA is to figure out where to put the path. And that's how we got to where we are. Again, we can disagree with that, But that's where we got to where we're at. I appreciate your testimony. Well,
Mayor Adams, I just want to respond to that briefly. You can make it a city policy to enforce the disorderly conduct statute as a violation if that's what you want to do. You can make that a city policy. And also, the ADA doesn't address people. The ADA addresses objects on the sidewalk and not people on the sidewalks.
No, it deals with passage.
But it doesn't say anything about
people.
We have
a team of lawyers that disagree with you. It deals with passage and access.
It doesn't say anything about people being in the blocking.
Now, let me finish. I get the last word for today until you send me an email. The ADA does talk about access. The purpose of the ADA is to provide access to a full range of ability. And it takes into account how things are designed and passageways. So we disagree with you on that interpretation, but that's fine. We wanted to have some standard. We didn't want to be totally subjective. We wanted to know, in terms of passage for less than fully abled people, what should we be looking at? And that's the reason we did that. I do not agree with you that hammering people with a criminal infraction is more compassionate than allowing them non-criminal ways to deal with an infraction. I just honestly disagree with you. And I appreciate your testimony. We're going to move on now. I thought it was a good interaction. Sir. Oh, sir.
Yeah, it's me. Thank you. Thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. First of all, I just want to talk to you about, I actually then accidentally fell asleep in the park. I think this kind of pertains to the same kind of thing. Fell asleep in the park twice, or three times, actually. I got exclusion tickets for 30 days on two of them. And then on the third one, I accidentally came back into the park, which I was asked to go to court on that, which the outcome became $150 fine. Okay, now, what we're talking here is kind of the same thing. Some homeless individuals that accidentally, by not their own purpose, because they don't have no place to go, will get themselves in this kind of a predicament. $150, you're talking $250 fine. Okay, now, how could that homeless person utilize that a lot better than that? You were talking about transportation earlier. That they could use that for working, transportation, eating. They won't have to be sitting around downtown doing that kind of stuff. They could be going out somewhere else. They could be going to a shelter and, or maybe paying for a shelter in a little spot in a shelter. But no, you want to just have them just sit right in certain areas at certain times. You said certain areas of people that are handicapped. There's a bunch of people out there that are handicapped that if you do have just certain areas for them to go to, it'll be utilized just like that. I mean, just really quick, just like that. But what I'm really thinking about, too, is also the other side of this. So, I mean, if we're blocking or homeless people are blocking areas, so then wouldn't families be blocking areas too if they're talking, right in the walkway as you were talking about? Also, window shopping too would be the same thing. Would you have to push those people on outside also and tell them, look, hey, you're gonna have to be over here because this is a walkway. This is where the area is not supposed to be utilized for that kind of area.
Just to tick through your concerns, I appreciate the opportunity to reiterate, you'll be able to stand anywhere. Anyone will, or whatever, if they're disabled, stand or whatever, in whatever capacity, anywhere. It's in the passenger, it's in the pedestrian zone that if you're asked to move, you need to move. There isn't a place, and folks that are disabled are allowed, obviously, anywhere. That's the law.
Yeah, I'm just saying that, there's a lot of people out there that can't and probably don't even have the documentation to show that they're, injured or something like that.
How do you find that out? That's why
not?
The exception, you'll review the exceptions. I'm happy to, because the time's getting a little late, go over it with you in person. The exceptions are really clear. In terms of people that are not fully able to move or incapacitated. We have to move on because we are hitting up against the 5 o'clock.
Well, I still have a few more seconds left I see here on there. What I just want to say, though, I mean, if you are going to pass this, what I want to suggest to you, Mayor, and also the city or the commissioners, is that if you are going to do this, maybe you guys should stand out there and direct traffic on this and make sure everybody's doing the right thing. I mean, show some initiative on this. You know, I mean, show some leadership on this. Well, you know, just stand right on out there and tell.
As a decoy for pedestrians, I got to move on. I got to move on.
Also, the other thing, too, though, I mean, you talked about asking for help in other counties and other cities and stuff. I'm willing to take that on and try to do that stuff if you want to. You know, I mean, if we have to do this, I mean, I am. I'm sick and tired
really
of coming back and forth
that.
And talking like this. I mean, every time it's the same thing over and over. We're rehashing everything over and over and over. I'm tired of this. So, I mean, if it means that I have to, you know, do whatever I have to, I'm willing to step on up for that.
I appreciate that. There's an opportunity to get more investments for more local governments, and I appreciate that. We'll take you up on that. Sir, thanks for waiting.
Of course. I'm Marco Lampson. I think that last time I was up here, I was talking about crisis or solutions. I was talking about Jack Collins, who got killed. I think, once again, I'd like to talk about crisis or solutions. I think that taking a year, well, let me talk about the Portland Business Alliance first. And as we know, that the Portland Business Alliance is one of the largest lobbyist groups. It has some of the most money spent on lobbying City Hall. And I think that as much as I'd like to talk to you gentlemen today, excuse me, and if it's, apologize.
Ooh, you're in trouble.
No, yeah. Check my language. I think that what I'm really interested in is looking critically at what's going to happen. We know that you're going to vote yes on this. This is something that is going to happen. You wouldn't spend a year working on it and then come to this context. The superintendent was at Benson today to talk about the walkout and the redesign plan and asking for participation for a month. We know this decision was already made. What I'd like to talk about is that crisis, is the fact that instead of addressing the fact that in 1990 there was 10,000 units of affordable housing, and now in 2010 we're at 4,000 units of affordable housing, instead of addressing that for the last year, instead of addressing it for the last 4 years, we in turn are actually addressing a sit-lie ordinance, a crisis solution. So I think for me, it's really, really key to be looking at what's the time spent, what are you putting time and money into. If we do pay taxes and put your money out there, why are you looking at criminalization or looking to target real specific communities? And then manipulate the ADA to really be able to continue that instead of really kind of addressing that crisis. We're in a crisis of housing that's got brought up multiple times today. So
we're the only jurisdiction in the state that sets aside 30% of tax increment resources. We're the only jurisdiction in the region that spends $10.6 million in general fund. We are more than just good words. We put real dollars behind our strategies. Does that mean we've stopped and we're resting on our laurels? We're not. I want to reassure you that.
Question, Nick Fish. What's the condo on Mississippi and Shavers? Mississippi and Skidmore, maybe is it called? Do you know the name of that condo?
Yeah.
And that has affordable housing. That has urban renewal money going into it because of affordable housing directly, because it has voucher programs for Section 8.
So my question is
why did that money go to condos instead of affordable housing? Why did we not fund real Section 8? Because those vouchers, those are still open. Those condos, yes, absolutely.
So your figures, 10,000 to 4,000. I don't know where you got those figures. Mm-hmm. Your statement.
It's HUD Section 8. You can look it up in.
No, I help write that report annually. And sure. Your comments about Section 8 vouchers to fund condos. This is, I don't know where you get the information. If you want to share it with me, I'll get you the real information because it's incorrect. But you know, there is an anomaly here, because I suspect that if and let's be honest about something.
Sure.
I suspect that if we got the second stimulus from Washington that we'd all like to see, to build the housing to end homelessness within a year. If we did that, I think you'd still be here criticizing this ordinance. So let's be honest about that. And I'm not criticizing you for that. If you believe this has constitutional defects, you should be here and you should be advising us. But I think it's fair to say if we could end this problem, which we are all up here committed to ending, you would still be here pointing out what you think are defects with this ordinance, and I respect that. But I think we can also separate the issues and talk about the sidewalks and talk about a joint strategy to end homelessness, because you have no quarrel up here with a strategy to end homelessness. So
I have no quarrel with the strategy to end homelessness, the 10-year policy to end homelessness.
There's no quarrel with my colleagues in terms of a commitment to end homelessness. I think, though, we can separate out the issues.
I think the quarrel is exactly that. I think that the fact that I'd like to see the amount of money that it took for the last year that went to your budgets directly to make these decisions on a sit-lie ordinance that directly targets houseless populations, I think I have a quarrel with that instead of putting that money directly into things that would fund
nothing.
Solutions. Almost nothing.
We're all paid. Most people involved with this
are telling houseless folks that the amount you get paid is almost nothing.
You asked the question.
Sure.
Beyond our salaries, compared to the $109 million we're spending this year on homelessness and affordable housing services, I appreciate what you're saying. I really do. And reasonable people can disagree on how we should manage the city sidewalks. You've heard our intentions. We're listening. We've listened since October on how best before that. We're listening 3 months before that on how to best respond to the situation. We can disagree on the details. Like Commissioner Fish said, we do agree on the issue of providing adequate homeless services and affordable housing. It's been very difficult in this awful recession, and a lot of people are feeling the pain. And that's why even though we were cutting budget citywide, we actually increased funding in this area. So we're going to disagree, it sounds like I am, respectfully, on the sidewalk management approach. We don't disagree on affordable housing and homeless programs. And if you look at what we've done over the past even 15 months, we've increased funding. We're the only jurisdiction that has dedicated urban renewal funding for affordable housing, and it goes to deeply affordable housing. I'm happy to look in the issue on Mississippi and see what decisions were made there, and we'll get back to you and post that on the website.
Sure.
Thank you all very much for your testimony.
Our last people who signed up are William Barnes, and if Ben Doner or Beatty Hempster are here.
I get it all to myself.
Well, how are you?
I'm all right.
5 minutes, Bill.
It's nice to see you again.
Good to see you. Good to see everyone. My name is Bill Barnes. It's been an entertaining afternoon. I heard a pretty song. I heard an attorney sit up here and tell me that she has a hard time defining what on foot means. But it's been an interesting afternoon. As you know, I do a lot of things in this city. I have been homeless since June the 1st, 2000. Every day, Monday through Friday, I have breakfast at the Blanchet House. Every night at 6:30, 6:45, I have dinner at the Portland Rescue Mission. I sit on Commissioner Fritz's, what do you call that thing Monday afternoon? Whatever it is.
Sharing public sidewalks.
Yeah, I sit there. I sit on the board of the Downtown Neighborhood Association. In 2 months, I'll probably be the president of the Downtown Neighborhood Association.
Congratulations.
I read this draft probably 8 or 9 times. The most recent time before the attorney did this afternoon was this morning. It's 8 pages long. I do not disagree with one word written on any page of that document. I think it's a good, solid document. There are a lot of people here who are angry for a lot of reasons. And I understand that. But the fact of the matter is, the bottom line is that the public sidewalks are public. They need to be free and clear for everyone. It is the city's responsibility to make sure that they stay clear for everyone. I think that this document, this proposal, is a very good answer and a very good way to make sure those sidewalks are clear for everyone. I think you should adopt it. And I think you should do it today. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. David, if you'd come back up, Warble and Warren, to answer any questions that anyone might have. I have a couple just to the notion of a better definition of on foot, standing. Your thoughts on that?
You always want your lawyers to draft as simply as possible. We got to boil it down. I thought that on foot would work. If you want to add some words to it, you could make very clear that on foot, whether stationary or moving. I think it's probably unnecessary. I don't see the court being concerned about this problem. If you want to make extra certain it never happens, you could add words. I don't like the additional complexity. You got a couple clauses there, so you'd probably want to add those words both to the on foot clause and the assisted by a mobility device clause.
We could also convey it as our legislative intent.
You could add a whereas clause, I think.
Or just this conversation.
This conversation might well do it.
Why did you choose on foot rather than standing?
Because you can move.
Because we had to deal with people who were stationary and moving.
Oh, I see.
So standing wouldn't do it. Moving wouldn't do it.
And
they're both on foot, at least in my mind. Both people who are moving, walking on foot, and standing on foot are on foot. It seemed inclusive as a generic category.
I have a question to follow up on the issue of free speech, permitted
yes.
activity. The last ordinance like this that came by, I voted against specifically for that reason. So I paid particular attention when Andrea pointed this out. Is there some way, and in reviewing what she's written and looking at the ordinance itself, it looks like it's a semantic issue that can be straightened out fairly simply? Is that true? That is, what she raised a concern about is people can congregate for purposes of free speech if it's permitted activity, and there's a couple of sections in the ordinance that seem to conflict G5 and G6 with each other. And it looked to me, in just reviewing both of those sections, that we should be able to straighten that out.
Yeah, I would agree with that. And again, the intent here was not to take away from those protected free speech rights, but to allow that activity actually to happen.
So are you focused on that, David?
That would be number 5.
They actually say two different things each section. So it's
well, 5 and 6.
5 and 6.
Mm-hmm. They're meant to. They're directed at different.
But in terms legally
different events. Now, I think what Andrew pointed out is that the exception in 5 only applies to those rallies and demonstrations and meetings that are larger than 200 people, because that's all permits required. A 100-person event on the sidewalk, a performance, say, or a festival on a sidewalk wouldn't require a permit. Therefore,
less than 8 hours.
Well, that's a little different. I can talk about why that is the way it is. But I think that the hole that Andrew was talking about, Ms. Meyer was talking about, is that it's possible to have an event smaller than requires a permit that wouldn't be subject to this exception.
Right.
And you might just take out the permit language not care whether it's it's a permitted parade, festival, performance, rally, demonstration, meeting, or similar event. If you took that out, there would no longer be that gap between 0 and 200.
So, but do you agree that that is a potential issue and we can address that either that
yes.
way or some other way after you review this later?
Yes, I think.
Because that would make me more comfortable.
Yeah, we didn't really spot that hole. Now, as to 6, would you like me to go through the thinking on 6?
Not necessarily. I just want to make sure we don't create a prohibition that we did intend to create because somebody did not have a permit, causing an enforcement action that ends up in court, which was not the original intent. So
sure.
I'm not asking you to explain these sections to me so they're written to my satisfaction. Rather, if we have a conflict between what we've written and what we intended to have happen, that we straighten that out. And I think Andrea pointed out a potential problem.
They're not necessarily in conflict. Yes, if we eliminate the permit clause in 5, it certainly wouldn't be in conflict with 6. 6 okay. is permissive. If it is an expressive event over 3 people, it's an exception.
Okay.
So the hole we have to fill is non-expressive events
that don't have a permit.
That don't have a permit up to 200 people.
Right. So you can figure out how to do that.
Yes.
Okay.
And along the same line, thank you, Commissioner. That was a very helpful line of questions. There was in one of the previous versions the issue of that 3 people is an assembly, but 2 people is not an assembly, or 1 person is not an assembly.
Right.
Are we now saying that any such assembly can be in the area where assemblies and sitting and lying are allowed? So we're not so worried about how many people are doing the assembling?
Mr. Nolan also wondered whether this affected assembly. It does not. It affects a certain behavior that might occur in an assembly. Let me make very clear. These prohibitions have no effect on the ability of people to congregate on a sidewalk.
Yeah, we don't speak to that.
What it would do is, up until three people, would have an effect on people's ability to sit in the pedestrian use zone as part of that assembly. Now, government can place reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions on how people conduct their expressive events. The city had to decide at what point it's willing to give up the pedestrian